I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I'm your host, Mike Madison. I appreciate you joining me today. Lots to get to. Next hour, we will do what we always do, which is False Flag Friday. There's actually a lot of stuff, three different stories in there. One is what is actually happening in Ukraine. The truth is starting to bleed out, even in mainstream media. It's pretty fascinating to read. Particularly in the context of the United States, the propaganda that is going on here and around the world in most of the mainstream media, which is this underdog ragtag team, is beating back Russia. It's really very sad stuff for the Ukrainian people, but we'll talk about that, as well as the plot to kill George W. Bush. Looks like that apparently belongs firmly in the False Flag Friday segment, some pretty shocking reports on what went on there. Plus a little something from General McGregor. And he, Douglas McGregor, he served for a few weeks in the Trump administration once Trump was out of office. He should have been there for Trump's entire term instead of the defense chiefs we had from Raytheon and Boeing. But he's got some interesting stuff on China and Taiwan that people need to hear, I think, particularly people on the right, to better understand, if you're seeking a better understanding of what's going on there. And then we'll finish up the show, as we do every Friday, with This Week on the Crazy Train. I've got a lot of notes for today's show. I've got more than I can cover in my 2 hours. People always think 2 hours. How in the world do you do 2 hours? I'm telling you, some days it is a struggle, and some days I know I'm not going to get to everything that I've got. So to start off today, I thought this was pretty fascinating. I heard this on the No Agenda show. So someone brought this out of the dustbin of history. This is actually a piece from John Cleese. John Cleese is somebody with Monty Python. This was recorded in the 1970s as they talk about extremism. We certainly see extremism in our world today. It is really nothing new, although it feels it is much more intense now. I think we've never been so divided and so at each other's throats, at least not in modern times. But this is a pretty fascinating clip. Number one, it makes some good points about people on both sides and how they cling to these ideas. And just the beautiful thing is that you think if you're on one side or the other, that your side is always completely pure and the other side is always completely evil. This is probably a condition of humans in the first place, but that certainly has not changed. But what I did think was interesting about this is not only is this still going on and probably accelerated today from the 1970s when this was recorded, but also some of the changes you'll hear as he talks about left and right extremism and how some of the things have actually flip-flopped since the 1970s.
Seriously, though, we've heard a lot about extremism recently, a nastier, harsher atmosphere everywhere, more abuse and bother boy behavior, less friendliness and tolerance and respect for opponents. All right, but what we never hear about extremism is its advantages. Well, the biggest advantage of extremism is that it makes you feel good because it provides you with enemies. Let me explain. The great thing about having enemies is that you can pretend that all the badness in the whole world is in your enemies and all the goodness in the whole world is in you. Attractive, isn't it? So, if you have a lot of anger and resentment in you anyway, and you therefore enjoy abusing people, then you can pretend that you're only doing it because these enemies of yours are such very bad persons. And that if it wasn't for them, you'd actually be good-natured and courteous and rational all the time. So, if you want to feel good, become an extremist. Okay, now you have a choice. If you join the hard left, they'll give you their list of authorized enemies. Almost all kinds of authority, especially the police, The city, Americans, judges, multinational corporations.
Not anymore. Now they love the multinational corporations.
Public schools, furriers, newspaper owners, fox hunters, generals, class traitors, and, of course, moderates. Or, if you'd rather be an extremist on the hard right, no problem, fine, you still get a lovely list of enemies, only they're different ones. Noisy minority groups, unions, Russia, weirdos, demonstrators, welfare sponges, meddlesome clergy, peaceniks, the BBC, strikers, social workers, communists, and, of course, moderates. And upstart actors. Now, once you're armed with one of these super lists of enemies, you can be as nasty as you like and yet feel your behaviors morally justified. So you can strut around abusing people and telling them you could eat them for breakfast and still think of yourself as a champion of the truth, a fighter for the greater good, and not the rather sad paranoid schizoid that you really are.
Oh, boy, not much has changed. But what has changed is social media. As I was listening to this, you know, this is back in the 1970s where basically you didn't hear where what 99.9% of the people would say, even if they were extremists on either side, they didn't really have a platform to go out there and spread this to the entire world. Now we have social media. We've got extremists on either side, extremists on different issues. And some of you may not consider yourself extremist. You only view the other side as extremist. But the major point of that is it's just kind of fascinating. Nothing's really changed. It's just now we're amplified by social media. And when we get into our little groups, we believe we can say the most vile and nasty things to another human being we've never, ever met, and yet still feel really good about ourselves because we believe all the goodness is on our side and not on the others. Now, let me go ahead and confess. I would probably say, within this context, I am a bit of an extremist myself. It's just that while most people go left to right, they do the lateral attacks on their extremism. I go from down to up. I kind of cross perpendicular what other people do. I have extremist anti-government ideas, I guess. That may get me in trouble for even admitting, but it's probably pretty apparent in the show. But anyway, pretty fascinating. And even to hear, you know, they talk about the right will take on protesters. Well, now we're finding out that the right really likes their protesting. The right used to hate peaceniks. Now, he's coming from Great Britain. This is where he's reporting this. But these same kinds of things back in the 1970s were happening. They talk about, the right hating the peacenik. Now I'm seeing more peaceniks on the right, actually. I am certainly a peacenik, an anti-war guy. So it's interesting to hear some of the things have flip-flopped. The left loves the public schools. They love the multinational corporations. And now they love the generals and the military-industrial complex. So some things have changed, but the idea of attacking others and still feeling good about ourselves has not changed. I wanted to start with a little bit of financial stuff today. I'm more convinced than ever that the turn is in, that we're in for some rocky times. And I'm going to play a clip for you that shows why I believe this now. Sometimes it is the kind of the contrarian view. You know, a lot of people point to the turn in the housing market was when certain headlines or certain magazine covers, I believe one at the very top of the market was a picture of a house that was actually an ATM machine. And you would see that people said, you know, now it's different. Now the home is just designed to continually accelerate in value, and then you pull cash out of it without having to do anything. And people will point to some of these magazine covers as being the absolute top. Like the month that something like that comes out in 2007 is when the housing market starts to crack. Now, this is kind of one of those clips to me that say, yeah, the turn is in. This was a debate between Ross Gerber, who's a money manager, and Peter Schiff. And back in 2006, 2007, Peter Schiff was going, it's S-C-H-I-F-F. Peter Schiff was going around and explaining to people what was about to happen to housing, and they were laughing at him. I've played the clip on this show. You can go to YouTube and do a search for Peter Schiff was right. And Peter Schiff was going to CNBC and to Bloomberg and to Fox Business, and he was telling everybody, this is not sustainable. This housing market's going to crash. You got subprime borrowers out there. They're going to start defaulting when their interest rates reset, and everybody laughed at him. They laughed at him. I remember Art Laffer in particular, no pun needed there, that's his name, Art Laffer really laughed at Peter Schiff on Fox Business because he said Peter Schiff was just such a downer. And Peter Schiff basically laid out exactly what took place in 2008-2009. He was right. Well, this is another time where Peter Schiff is doing a debate with somebody. This is on Real Vision Finance. And you can barely hear it. It's not really audible. But you can hear the guy. His name is Ross Gerber. You can hear him kind of laughing at Peter Schiff as Peter Schiff explains to you what's about to happen to us financially.
Inflation is cured by recession. Historically, when you see recession, you see decline.
This is actually the moderator. He's just posing a question here.
Declining prices. Peter makes the case for a 1970s style stagflation type environment, whereby you have this, Ross also making this case almost that the U.S. is the cleanest shirt in the pile of dirty laundry. Peter Schiff sees a dirtier pile more generally. Let me go first to Peter and then back to Ross. In terms of that summary, how do you respond to that notion?
Which notion?
Well, the idea that first, the Fed balance sheet is a substantial problem. And second, that specifically that recession is not the cure for inflation and that we may be moving into a stagflationary environment.
The balance sheet is a huge problem, and it's something that I predicted. You know, when the Fed first made the mistake of doing quantitative easing, I said that we would be here. I predicted a $10 trillion balance sheet back then, and we're almost there. When the Fed did the first QE, I said they would never stop. There would be QE2, QE3. I said we'd have more QEs than Rocky movies. You know, when Bernanke lied to Congress and said he wasn't monetizing the debt, I said, no, that's exactly what he's doing. Bernanke pretended that the government buying bonds was temporary. I knew that it was permanent because once you start this drug habit, you can never give it up. And, you know, the more drugs you take, the more you need, because you build an economy that's even more addictive and more dependent on that drug. That's why we can't take it away the way Volcker did to fight inflation. We're going to overdose on this monetary heroin. And the real risk is a hyperinflation. And the economy is going to go through a protracted decline. And what a lot of people focus on inflation and recession is they think about, oh, well, demand goes down during a recession. Well, supply is going to go down even more when the dollar crashes and all those goods that we used to import aren't coming in anymore. I mean, imagine all the shelves that are completely empty because we can no longer afford to import the products that used to fill them. Then the products that we do make are going to be exported, because the dollar is going to be so low that whatever we do make, somebody in some other country is going to outbid somebody in America. So even though Americans are broke and unemployed, prices are going to be going through the roof because of the weak dollar and our lack of domestic production. So it's going to be not just stagflation. I've been saying it's a inflationary depression, right? We're going to have the economy of the 1930s, but worse, with the inflation of the 1970s, but worse. So that's where we're headed. Now, there are solutions to this. I mean, they're none of them are painless, but they involve dismantling most of the federal government,
amen,
returning to free market capitalism and sound money.
Amen.
And, you know, we could eventually dig our way out of this hole. I mean, capitalism is a fantastic tool if we can unleash it. But what we've been living under is not capitalism. And the disaster that we're headed for is not a function of capitalism, but socialism. We did it to ourselves with central banking and central planning.
Ross, your response.
Wow. You know, I'm not bringing Peter to any parties, man. You know,
well, I'm fun at parties. No,
Yeah. And that is the last part of that clip is the thing that really kind of strikes me. I've had earlier this week, I talked about it. Sylvia said, you guys need to be a little bit more upbeat on your shows. Boy, you're a little dark. That's what it is. Peter Schiff is laying out the reality of the situation. And this guy, he's good looking guy. He's got his hair slicked back. He's in a nice suit. He's out there, got the backdrop of L.A. behind him. And he was, you can't really tell during that clip, but he's laughing along the way as when Peter Schiff says, we haven't been, you know, we're not using capitalism right now. We're using cronyism and corporatism. And this guy just laughs at that. When he says that it's going to be depression like the 1930s, but worse, and inflation like the 1970s, but worse. At the same time, this guy just laughs. This is one of those things that tells me when the kind of the normie money managers just scoff at this kind of stuff, this is when usually you know it's happening. And but the payoff at the end, well, I'm not taking you to any parties. That's the problem we have in the United States. If you discuss reality, if you discuss the current situation in a realistic way, it's a little dark. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. A lot of people run away from that. They don't want to hear the truth. This is why our media is still our media. And this is, I think, a sign that the turn is in. We will see. You've heard Peter Schiff lay out his thing, what he sees coming down the pike, and you've heard this guy laugh at it. We'll see in the end who's right. When we come back, we are going to take a look. There is an advertisement. There's an advertisement that was out on a bus stop. I'm going to describe it when we come back, what life for the American worker is like right now. And then we're going to take probably the rest of this hour to take a look at the World Economic Forum. I've got a ton of clips of what was discussed at this confab that Roger Wicker, the senator from Mississippi, the poor boy born in Pontotoc, Mississippi on July 5th of 1951, made it all the way to Davos, Switzerland to hang out with the richest of the rich. We're going to listen to a lot of these clips, so we'll start off with this advertisement. I think it's very telling. It's an advertisement of what the American worker is going through. Then we'll take a look at the World Economic Class. Be right back.
Went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians.
I know a lot of people will hear like that Peter Schiff clip where he talks about QE1, QE2. He talks about the Federal Reserve, the balance sheet. 99% of the people don't understand what any of those things mean, and they don't really care. I'm fully aware of that. It's not going to stop me from trying to put it out there and hopefully make it somewhat interesting. But here's how it works. What the Federal Reserve and the central bankers have done is change your life on a daily basis and over the past few decades in pretty substantial ways. And I'll just show you the evidence of it here. There was an advertisement on a bus stop. Where is this? It doesn't say where it is. This is on the side of a bus stop, a big sign. You know how they'll put ads on the sides of the overhang in the cities where you've got a bench there and it's got a cover over it so everybody can wait in the rain for the bus. Big banner says, should I get the sides should not be a question. Now, when it says, should I get the sides, underneath it is a picture of a guy stuffing a big wad of French fries into his mouth. So what they're talking about with sides is, should I get the French fries too or just the burger? Okay, so this is for the average American worker here. Should I get the sides should not be a question. A picture of the guy shoving fries in his mouth. Access the pay you've earned early for the things you've earned today. This is an advertisement for a pay advance thing. It says pay advance, you've earned it. We've got a situation in the United States right now where people are financing French fries. Obviously, a payroll advance through pay advance is going to cost you a fee. So they tell you that you deserve those French fries. And you may not have the money jingling around in your pocket right now for those fries, but we'll let you access your pay, your next paycheck a little early. So you can get those $5 order of fries. Of course, they're going to cost you $7 with the fees involved in getting a paycheck advance. But we think you deserve those French fries today. That is life for the American worker right now. Meanwhile, the class that the central bankers have created are all meeting in Davos, Switzerland at the World Economic Forum. More about that in just a second. And the headline on CNBC yesterday, over $50 for a burrito? World's elite splash the cash on snacks at Davos. Hungry attendees at this year's World Economic Forum may have found some of the food a little hard to stomach with some eye-popping prices in some locations. Just a stone's throw away from the main Davos Congress Center, the fancy Steinenberger Grand Hotel Belvedere was charging punters 49 Swiss francs or $51 for a burrito on its snacks menu. It was accompanied by a small bowl of guacamole and salsa. For comparison, a burrito in Taco Bell can cost as little as $2. A portion of French fries was also an offer on the at the Belvedere for 21.5 for Swiss francs or $22.41 American dollars. So there you go. While Americans are financing French fries, the Davos crowd that the central banks have created, these are not people who have earned this money in most cases. Now, they have, there's some very smart people there, some created some products, but they have not achieved this level of wealth by just providing a good or a service. No, the Federal Reserve has lavished them with endless money printing that has landed straight in their pockets, enough for them to just not think twice about a $50 burrito or a $22 a basket of fries. And you can trust me, they are not getting a payroll advance to afford them. When I come back, we're going to get into some of this Davos crowd. Exactly what was Roger Wicker listening to when he went to the World Economic Forum this year?
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYEB. I'd like to talk about the shooting some and the police response. And that's kind of in my wheelhouse because I am probably the only show on conservative media that will hold police accountable for things. I'm not a fan. I'm not a defend the police at all costs. Most people on conservative talk radio, anytime there is anything where a police officer is involved, they twist themselves in knots to make sure that the police officer has no culpability. And it's always whoever is on the receiving end of a bullet or an arrest. I don't do that. I praise police for the incredible heroic work they do, stepping into domestic violence situations and saving women, helping people on the side of the road, solving murders and thefts and crimes. There's great heroic work the police do, but a large part of their time is also spent, I believe, violating constitutional freedoms that we should have in this country, particularly in the war on drugs and the war on seat belting and helmets. There's all kinds of things the police enforce that I totally disagree with as well. And apparently, it looks like with this shooting, the police performed poorly, to say the least. They're saying that the guy was firing rounds for 12 minutes outside, nothing happened. And this is interesting. This is actually good for the gun Second Amendment supporters' point that police are great, but they can't be everywhere all the time. And in this case, they were there and still didn't engage. This is why we need to be able to arm and protect ourselves. Apparently, the guy was out shooting for 12 minutes, inside the building for 40 minutes. The police were not going in. They were not engaging. Even while shots were ringing out, the police were outside arresting and tasing parents. So there's a lot to unpack there. Probably won't have time for it. I don't want to get into this World Economic Forum stuff, but I'll tell you right now, I look at police like anybody else. They do good, they do bad. Anybody else, everybody else. So anyway, we may get to that, but it may be next week before we do. World Economic Forum, I think, hits home a little bit more because our own Roger Wicker went to the thing. Now, maybe he's just over there selling some catfish. Maybe he is turning on the elites in Switzerland to the delicacy that is Mississippi farm-raised catfish. But I doubt it. I don't know how he went over there. Did he fly commercial coach? Did he pay for his own ticket? Did taxpayers send him? Or did he fly over on one of the reported 1,500 private jets that brought the elites into Davos? I don't know. But what did he listen to while he was there? I think this kind of brings it home for us a little bit here. And I want to remind everybody of before I give you these ideas, these statements by people at the World Economic Forum, Henry Ford said, "It is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning." Well, you better get to revolutinating, because the plans they have for you are going to make it pretty much impossible if they get their way. Roger Wicker sat in the crowd for these things. Let's see our first one. This is one. This was, it doesn't really matter who it was. Let me see. Oh, this was the Australian Safety Commissioner, and she had her views on free speech.
We are finding ourselves in a place where we have increasing polarization everywhere, and everything feels binary when it doesn't need to be. So I think we're going to have to think about a recalibration of a whole range of human rights that are playing out online, you know, from freedom of speech to the freedom to, you know, to be free from online violence, or the right of data protection to the right to child dignity.
So there you go, Roger Wicker was at an organizational meeting about how they might recalibrate the ideas of free speech. Here was a fun one. This is the Alibaba Group president, J. Michael Evans, sitting in front of the World Economic Forum backdrop as he gave this new fun idea for all of us.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Am I making too big of a deal of this to think that... And let's say Roger Wicker wasn't alone for all of you Republicans out there. You think if you vote really hard in November, we're going to take back the House and the Senate. There were 10 Republicans and 12 Democrats reported from Congress over at the World Economic Forum. So I guess maybe that's the difference between the two parties. The Democrats are so bad, they send 12 of their politicians over to the World Economic Forum. See, the Republicans are the good guys. They only sent 10. The Democrats want to tax me at 37%. The Republicans only want to tax me at 35%. This is the nibbling of the edges that divides us. I'm going to play this one more time. This is World Economic Forum. They've come up with a new technology. And as I said, I don't know if I'm overplaying this, but I just picture a Mississippi senator sitting in the audience of this. Now, I don't know if he was at this particular presentation. They do a lot of breakout sessions. Maybe he was just sitting out on the curb with like a fold-out table with a sign that said, learn more about Mississippi catfish and cotton. But I doubt it. I don't know if he was in the audience of this thing, but these are the kinds of things that were discussed. I've got a ton of these clips at the World Economic Forum. One more time, how we're going to judge your individual carbon footprint at the World Economic Forum.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Stay tuned. An individual carbon footprint tracker. Now these are, again, 1,500 private jets taken over there. Albert Bourla, I don't have the clip in front of me. I played it earlier this week. Albert Bourla, he's the CEO of Pfizer. He was certainly at the World Economic Forum. Yeah, he said they're working on a technology where when they inject you or they give you a pill, some kind of little chip or something goes down, and as your stomach acids, I guess, dissolve this thing, it sends out a signal to let everybody know that you've taken your meds. He said, just imagine what this would do for compliance. This was said at the World Economic Forum that Roger Wicker's attending. Bill Gates, I don't think I have time for this one. Bill Gates announced a new partnership with Pfizer. Of course, Bill Gates is at the World Economic Forum. Here's a concerning one here. They're talking to the CEO of Credit Suisse, and this is about what you can get ready for with your currency should these nut jobs have their way.
Fast forward 5 years. Do we have a central bank digital coin out there in the world that is being utilized on a daily basis, whether it's wholesale or retail, and it becomes a superior system? Francois, yes or no?
We have several experiments which are not very far from that. No? They are not yet generalized, but they could be let's say, the next 3 years, probably. It will go quicker on the wholesale side, yes. I guess, because it raises less sensitive questions.
Yes, Axel.
No, I'm quite glad to hear what you're saying, François, on the wholesale digital currency, not coin. I am also a believer that will come in 5 years, yes. What I try to say is obviously, you know, we still have those huge legacy environment. They need to migrate as well, so we will not yet see all the benefits coming through. But it will come and will be much more efficient, also probably much more secure, lowering transaction costs. On the retail side, I'm much more skeptical. Certainly call it for the, you know, established economies.
Yeah, so what they're talking about is the central bank digital currency. Yeah, they say, yeah, 3 years, we should have this thing rolled out, maybe just for wholesale stuff. It'll take a little longer to bring the peons in. But once they normalize central bank digital currencies for wholesale transactions, they'll roll it out on the retail people there. There may be a little hesitation, but we believe in 5 years, we should have this thing rolled out. This is World Economic Forum. Now, when I come back, there are a couple of pretty amazing clips. One is Klaus Schwab, the Bond villain himself, who heads up the World Economic Forum. And then this Yuval Harari, he talks about, he is kind of one of the chief advisors to Klaus Schwab. And wait till you get a load of what he has in store for us. I'll be right back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right. I failed to mention, a listener called and said he called Roger Wicker's office to find out how he got over to Switzerland. The girl who answered the phone wasn't sure. I would imagine a good hometown boy from Pontotoc, Mississippi, probably had some cotton farmer donate a crop duster, and he made it across the Atlantic all the way to Switzerland in a crop duster so he could push Mississippi cotton and catfish. Certainly, that's why he was attending the World Economic Forum. The weather apparently was beautiful, too. They normally do this in January, which I'm sure is beautiful, but a tad chilly, and they have to worry about slipping on the ice. But the weather was just beautiful over there, so Roger Wicker got quite the vacation in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum. It'd be interesting to know who paid for that. This is Klaus Schwab, the Bond villain that runs the World Economic Forum, and he's going to tell you a little bit about, you know, I've just told you about your individual carbon footprint, the ingestible pills that make sure that you're monitored to take your meds, the central bank digital currency where they can track and trace everything that you purchase, that you buy, and that you sell. And Klaus Schwab is a little worried that this might, well, he doesn't say that's going to cause the anger. He thinks that just us being bad human beings is causing a lot of anger around the world.
I don't know how it will play out in November, but what we know is that we will end up with many more unemployed, and particularly also people in the gray economy, which are not counted for, who lose their jobs. So we will see definitively a lot of anger already now, but probably increased by the end of the year, because this crisis will be with us until we really have found a remedy. So we have to prepare for a more angry world. And how to prepare? It means to take the necessary action to create a fairer world, to see that we provide everybody with decent access to the health system, that we make sure that those people who are really left behind, and I'm not speaking only on national levels, I'm speaking also internationally. If I see now the tragedy in some of the emerging countries like South Africa, like some countries in East Asia, I think it's all, I don't have too many remedies. The remedies have to be discussed through dialogue by the stakeholders of our global system. But I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
There it is, the great reset. That's what he sees the need for. What does the great reset look like? What about those little people that are going to be angry, those that are left behind? Well, Yuval Harari, I believe is how you say his name. Y-U-V-A-U-L, something like that. I should have looked it up. His last name's Harari. He's the guy who wrote the book Sapiens. He is one of the chief advisors to the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab in particular. Get a load of what he says. Get a load of this. This is what the World Economic Forum thinks about all those people out there that are going to be angry and left behind.
The biggest question in maybe in economics and politics of the coming decades will be what to do with all these useless people.
Yeah, that wasn't a miss. You know, sometimes they go back and correct themselves. I'll start it over again, make sure that you caught that. The big question is, what do we do with all of these useless people?
The biggest question in maybe in economics and politics of the coming decades will be what to do with all these useless people. The problem is more boredom and how what to do with them and how will they find some sense of meaning in life when they are basically meaningless, worthless.
Excuse me. What do we do for these people? What are we going to do with these people that are just worthless and meaningless? What, how can we add any meaning to their life? It gets worse.
My best guess at present is a combination of drugs and computer games as a solution for more. It's already happening in under different titles, different headings.
Now, he's right. Drugs and computer games is what we're going to do with all these useless people that Klaus Schwab just told you are going to be very angry. We just need to get them on drugs and video games. That'll give their lives meaning. Now, if you think about it for just a second here in the United States, we're already there. We're the most over-medicated society out there. Everybody's on these mind-bending psychotropic drugs for depression and everything. But the video game in this case for most Americans, while video games themselves are popular, the video games right now that I believe are consuming people and trying to give them meaning is social media. It's Twitter. A bunch of people on antidepressants taking to Twitter. We're already halfway there.
You see more and more people spending more and more time or solving their inner problems with drugs and computer games, both legal drugs and illegal drugs. You look at Japan today, and Japan is maybe 20 years ahead of the world in everything, and you see all these new social phenomenon of people having relationships with virtual spouses. And you have people who never leave the house and just live through computers. I think once you're superfluous, you don't have power.
Once you are superfluous, man, I can't believe I'm struggling to say that. Once you mean nothing, once you're just a kind of an afterthought, you've got no power. So what has he said now? The useless people, the meaningless people, the I can't believe I can't say it. I'm not going to try it again.
Again, we're used to the age of the masses of the 19th and 20th century, where you saw all these successful, massive uprisings, revolutions, revolts. So we are used to thinking about the masses as powerful.
Not anymore.
But this is basically a 19th century, a 20th century phenomenon. I don't think that the masses, even if they somehow organize themselves, stand much of a chance. We are not in Russia of 1917 or in 19th century Europe. What we are talking about now is like a second industrial revolution, but the product this time will not be textiles or machines or vehicles or even weapons. The product this time...
What do you think it's going to be? What's the product now?
Will be humans themselves.
Ah.
They're basically learning to produce bodies and minds. Bodies and minds are going to be, I think, the two main products of the next wave of all these changes. That is optional. Again, and if you think about it from the viewpoint of the poor, it looks terrible.
Yeah. You meaningless people out there, he means all of us. We serve no function. Once the computers are running the machines, what possible need are they going to have for all of humanity that was used to running the machines? And I can't, I said, maybe I'm overstating this. I picture Roger Wicker, boy done good from Pontotoc, Mississippi, made his way all the way up to the World Economic Forum. And he's listening to these kinds of people. People should be lighting up Roger Wicker's phone lines just to ask why he went. As I said, perfectly logical explanation could be he was just selling catfish and cotton. And why would Roger Wicker do this? Well, the rumor is he's not running for re-election anyway. Of course, most of the normie Republicans don't care. They think they're in on this elite club right now. They've been convinced that because they've got a country club membership, that somehow they're on the inside track. I'm telling you, the financial crisis we're about to see is going to dissuade people of that notion rather quickly in the next few years. But the rumor is that Roger Wicker's not going to be running. I don't know if this is true or not. And then Tate Reeves will do the Mississippi shuffle, stick another cut-and-paste Republican in his place, and the Mississippi voter will go ahead and vote for him in re-election once they've got the name recognition. That's the World Economic Forum for you. They got big plans for all of us in the Great Reset.
Yeah! What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah!
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Friday. Every Friday at this time, I do False Flag Friday, and there's a pretty good story to fit into this one. If you heard about the attempted assassination of George W. Bush, we're certainly going to talk about that. This is Memorial Day weekend, and I'm fairly lonely in this idea, but you know, Memorial Day weekend is around honoring those people who sacrificed in the armed services of the United States. Certainly a noble idea. I think we don't take this far enough. It certainly would be nice to not have as many victims of these wars to honor, in my opinion. We are propagandized with the glories of war, and that is one of the ways that these psychopaths in Washington, D.C. send our kids halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand or in the marshes of Ukraine, wherever they decide to send them, because they've got you convinced that every death is just a heroic death. The problem is, and no disrespect to anybody who has passed away in the armed services, is that they are largely unnecessary deaths. They have to create this idea that we honor these people as if their sacrifice was always for the greater good of the United States. And this gives them cover. This gives them cover to sacrifice our troops. My opinion on Memorial Day, Veterans Day, or any of these things is that we should all be standing in the gap and saying, hell no, you don't use our troops unless it is to defend the United States. We should have a very high bar for ever sacrificing anybody who takes up arms to defend our country. Instead, we have allowed the psychopaths in Washington, D.C. to throw them around the world on a whim and without any declaration of war. And I think this is a big problem for the United States. One of the first things that, you know, they love to do is erase history. And this was just interesting. The smoking gun proving U.S. involvement in the 2014 coup in Kiev has been removed from YouTube after 8 years. It was the most complete version of the intercepted and leaked conversation between then Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Pyatt, the then U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, in which the two discuss who will make up the new government weeks before democratically elected Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown in a violent coup on February 21st of 2014. This was the proof that the United States was behind the revolution, the overthrow, the coup against the Ukrainian democratically elected president in 2014. And you got officials from the State Department discussing before the coup who's going to be going into the government afterwards. YouTube has now removed that. Disgusting. Couple of quotes here. I ran across this. I follow Tom Woods. He's a great libertarian. If you want to, he's probably a kinder, gentler libertarian than I am. But if you want to follow him, you'll get some interesting things to understand what libertarians believe. But he had tweeted out, in case you were ever inclined to support Ted Cruz or to consider him an enemy of the establishment, he's referring to a tweet that Senator Ted Cruz, who I know many of you really think he's a great constitutional guy, Ted Cruz tweeted out on May 22nd, the reason we should support our Ukrainian allies is because it protects American national security. It keeps America safer, and it prevents our enemies from getting stronger. Tom Woods pointing out, just in case you were ever actually supporting this guy or actually thought he was anti-establishment, understand Ted Cruz is a blood-soaked warmonger. And these people, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, and now we've heard Donald Trump say, I did this earlier in the week, that we need to give Ukraine more weapons and more money. All of these people paint this picture of this heroic Ukrainian army underdog that's attacked by Russia, but they're fighting them back and they've got Russia stalled in their tracks. Well, the truth seems to be seeping out, even in some of the most unlikely places. The Washington Post is out with a surprisingly dire and negative assessment of how U.S.-backed and equipped Ukrainian forces are actually faring. Gone is the rosy, idealizing lens through which each and every encounter with the Russians is typically portrayed. WAPO correspondent and author of the new report, Sardasan Raghavan, underscores of the true situation that, quote, Ukrainian leaders project an image of military invulnerability against Russia. But commanders offer a more realistic portrait of the war, where outgunned volunteers describe being abandoned by their military brass and facing certain death at the front. The report then pivots to the reality of an undertrained, poorly commanded, and equipped ragtag force of mostly volunteers in the East who find themselves increasingly surrounded by the numerically superior Russian military, which has penetrated almost the entire Donbass region. Quote, Ukraine, like Russia, has provided scant information about deaths, injury, or losses of military equipment. But after 3 months of war, this company of 120 men is down to 54 because of deaths, injuries, and desertions. And I want you to listen to some of the accounts of these people who are being forced out to fight this war for Zelensky, for Joe Biden, for NATO, for all of these warmongers that are trying to prolong this war. There's no diplomatic solution on the horizon. Zelensky is sacrificing his own citizens. And we've got Americans flying his flag and getting body pillows of the guy to snuggle with at night. And he is sending innocent Ukrainians out to fight and die in a war they know they cannot win. Quote, we are being sent to certain death, said a volunteer reading from a prepared script, adding that a similar video was filmed by members of the 115th Brigade 1st Battalion. Quote, we are not alone like this. We are many. And he means, we're all being sent to certain death. Ukraine's military rebutted the volunteers' claims in their own video posted online, saying that the deserters, see, if you point out the fact that the Ukrainian government has just put them out as meat puppets and are allowing them to die on the front lines, they call them deserters. The Ukrainian government said the deserters had everything they needed to fight. Quote, listen to this. This is the government that the Roger Wickers, the Lindsey Grahams, the Ted Cruzes, the Donald Trumps want to send tens of billions of dollars to this government. Here's what they think about their own volunteers that are fighting and dying for them. Quote, they thought they came for a vacation. That's why they left their positions. Many got shell shock. I don't know how to count them. This is a LAPCO guy said the casualties are largely kept secret to protect morale against troops. Protect the morale of the troops and the general public. Quote, on Ukrainian TV, we see that there are no losses. There is no truth. So the war propaganda in Ukraine is just sacrificing these poor guys. They were bankers and farmers. These are people just stripped out of their normal life for something that I continue to drive home. Could have been solved in an afternoon long before it even began by Ukraine just saying the people who want to be with Russia in Crimea and the Donbass region can be with Russia. We will stop attacking them. Ukraine killed 14,000 ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. I know I repeat this, but a lot of people listen to this show sparingly, I'm sure. This could have been solved in an afternoon, but people like Zelensky, Joe Biden, Boris Johnson in the UK, and NATO have forced these poor Ukrainians out of their way of life and onto the front lines where they have no equipment, no food, no water. The story goes on and on about all of the things. These people are being put out there to die just to try to hurt Russia. A lot of the World Economic Forum stuff, too, and I guess I'll go and throw this in because I didn't have time for it last hour. A lot of the World Economic Forum stuff was talking about disruptions to the global economy because of anyone, because of the pandemic. Of course, it wasn't because of the pandemic. It was because of the reactions of bureaucrats and politicians to the pandemic and the war in Russia. I mean, the war in Ukraine. They are trying to hide what was a certain financial collapse of this central bank model, this debt-based model they've been pumping for decades now. There are libertarian economists out there warning of exactly what's happening right now economically. Long before COVID, long before any Russian invasion of Ukraine, they are going to try to tuck this financial collapse into the pandemic and Ukraine and try to make you believe that everything was humming along great, and if we just hadn't had these two events, we would be just all be prosperous. It's a lie. They're going to use these things to hide the problems that were with our financial system long before COVID or Ukraine. We're going to come back. We're going to look at, there was a plot to assassinate George W. Bush. Did you hear about it? An Iraqi citizen? Oh my gosh. Thank goodness the FBI was there. Oh, they were there, all right. They were there for a long time. We'll be right back. So this week we were alerted to the fact that an Iraqi national who was seeking asylum in the United States had plotted to kill George W. Bush. There's a lot of pearl clutching about that when luckily the FBI was on the case. We're going to talk about that in just a second. The story reads, the FBI says it disrupted a plot to assassinate former President U.S. President George W. Bush. According to a fresh search warrant filing just uncovered by Forbes, an Iraqi citizen living in Columbus, Ohio, had been charged federally with an immigration crime and with aiding and abetting a plot to murder former United States President George W. Bush, the Justice Department confirmed in a Tuesday statement. I wanted to get down in here. I think Ted Cruz weighed in on this again, too. Oh, yeah, yeah. Stunning. This bombshell report puts it in absolute starkest terms, the necessity to secure the border now. And this is Ted Cruz playing his part in, you know, both of his political points. But the bottom line is, you know, that a lot of Americans gave up a lot of rights with this idea there's a terrorist behind every tree. They got to make sure that you remain scared that these people are out to kill us. Now, what's interesting about this, didn't Lindsey Graham, a sitting U.S. senator, just a few weeks ago say that what Vladimir Putin has done to Ukraine deserves the assassination of Putin? Didn't he say that? We got to take this guy out. I believe that was a direct quote. Now, what George W. Bush did to Iraq is the same thing. Is that a double standard of some kind? Now, I'm not for the assassination of George W. Bush. I think we should just throw shoes at him. And I do like the way that a lot of Republicans have turned their back on him. Finally, finally, finally. But there's some news about this alleged plot to assassinate W. The FBI used two confidential informants and surveillance of the alleged plotter's WhatsApp account to reveal plans to smuggle assassins into the U.S. to murder the former president, according to a search warrant application discovered by Forbes. There's many interesting things, but I definitely wanted to get into a couple of these. And here's the report from Meet the Press. I want you to listen to some of the details of this trained assassin that was on the hunt of George W. Bush. Listen to this NBC report on it.
Welcome back. We've been following some breaking news here the last couple hours after some dramatic court documents were accidentally unsealed and involved an FBI investigation into an apparent plot to assassinate former President George W. Bush.
First of all, they were not accidentally unsealed. This is part of the great war on terror and why they need to justify how they should track, trace, surveil everything. They got to spy on everybody because there's a terrorist behind every tree trying to kill us and take our stuff.
Here's our justice correspondent, Pete Williams. He joins me now. And Pete, again, well, let's just start with the details. How did we learn this, and how serious was and is the threat?
Well, we learned about it because Forbes, a website, published an excerpt from a search warrant affidavit that was mistakenly unsealed and then immediately sealed earlier today that first disclosed the evidence of this investigation. How much of a threat was there to the president? I'd say the answer is zero, because the FBI was constantly all over this man who's appearing in federal court, I think, in just a few minutes in Columbus, Ohio, where he lives. He is from Iraq. His name is Shihab Ahmed Shihab Shihab. He entered the United States, according to court documents, in September 2020. And Chuck, what's apparent from reading the court documents we've seen so far is that the FBI's initial interest in him was as somebody who was trying to smuggle people into the U.S. illegally. Not necessarily terrorists, just people he wanted to try to get into the U.S. from Iraq. And he at one point talked to confidential FBI informants. There were two of them very active in this case, two informants. He at one point said he would charge as much as $40,000 to get Iraqis who were not otherwise eligible to come into the U.S. illegally.
Okay, so this is some poor schlub who thinks he can extort some of his fellow countrymen over in Iraq, somehow smuggle them into the United States. I'm not talking about assassinating any president or anything. He's just some idiot out there thinking, oh, man, this is a way I can get rich. I can make a bunch of money, bring some people over. That's what his intention was. And then it suddenly took a weird turn.
And then as time went by, according to the court documents, this man started to brag to the FBI undercovers that he had ISIS connections, that he was from the same clan as al-Baghdadi, the ISIS leader, that he was involved in transporting explosives into vehicles in Iraq that he says were used to kill American soldiers there by blowing up those vehicles. And then in earlier this year, he started talking about wanting to bring in as many as six people from Iraq who he said were in a cell of ISIS that translates as the Thunder, who wanted to assassinate the former president.
It's about to get good. Now, listen to, so the FBI finds this guy who's just trying to make some money bringing it in there, but they just keep talking to him. So tell us all about yourself. You got any connections to ISIS? And this guy starts to brag. Yeah, I was part of fighting the Americans back in Iraq. And boy, you must be really angry about that. I mean, the U.S. came in and invaded. Didn't it really make you mad? You know, this is how this goes all the time. They take these idiots they have no ability to carry out any kind of attack, no support system, no money, no logistics, no plans. And then the FBI comes in with their confidential informants, and suddenly a plan takes shape.
And at one point, he actually flew down to Dallas. I think the FBI actually paid for that trip. He didn't.
You've heard a lot about this, right? That the guy flew down to Dallas to take pictures of the president's residence, right? You heard about that? Did you know the FBI actually paid for the flight?
Flew down to Dallas. I think the FBI actually paid for that trip. He didn't know it. The confidential informant picked him up, and they drove to the former president's residence.
Well, why don't you go down to Dallas and take a look at... I don't really need to. I really can't afford the flight. Oh, don't worry about that. We'll fly you down there. We'll pick you up at the airport, and we'll take you straight to George W. Bush's house.
Where this man, according to the court documents, made videos with his cell phone. And that's about as far as it goes, Chuck. So I think it's important to point out that obviously what the FBI says is that he was quite serious about this plot.
Once we talked him into it, he seemed to kind of think it was a good idea. It took us a few months to really talk him into it. I mean, we had to pay to fly him down to Dallas. We had to pick him up at the airport. We had to take him straight to George W. Bush's house. But then he started getting pretty excited about it.
But then he never actually had any means to carry it out. He never had any weapons himself. There's no indication that the people he was trying to smuggle into the U.S. ever got here. Now, you could well ask, well, what would have happened if the FBI hadn't stopped him?
Oh.
Would he ever have been able to do any of these things? And, of course, that's always an unanswerable question. But the FBI believes that he had a pretty strong intent here. So he's going to appear in federal court. He'll face a whole raft of federal charges this afternoon. And then at that point, I would think more court documents will be unsealed. But he is in custody now. And he'll be appearing in court shortly.
Whew. Oh, thank you, FBI, for keeping us all so safe. They do this over and over again. I know we generally don't care because they're brown people and Muslims. They've been doing this since the war on terror started. They take some hapless, many times just deranged, loner person. They find them on social media. Suddenly a couple of FBI informants get in their ear. The next thing you know, they're all hatching a plot together for which the target of the investigation had no money, no friends, no support network, no ability to carry out any kind of attack. The FBI provides all of those things. And then when the attack is supposedly about to take place, they bust the plot wide open, the plot that they created in the first place. There we go. The assassination of George W. Bush. These are clips that I'd like to bring to you. This is Douglas McGregor is on Judge Napolitano's show talking about the situation between in Ukraine. I don't have time to play it. It's a very interesting thing as he kind of explains what's going on in Ukraine. But I wanted to bring this to the conservative listening audience, because what I see, what I observe as a political observer, is a lot of Republicans and people on the right realizing the scam that is the Ukraine war, the scam that was the Iraq war, the disaster in Afghanistan. But at the same time, these same people were said, but Iran is different. We need to do something to Iran. As a matter of fact, Israel just killed an Iranian general. Just so if hostilities flare up there, we're on the hook for that one, too, because we do whatever Israel wants us to do. But conservatives will say, yeah, but Iran is different because Donald Trump told us that Iran was bad. And that's why we had to assassinate one of their sitting generals. And the other side on the right, hell-bent for a military confrontation with China. You believe that this, all of this stuff in Russia is made up. It's just ridiculous Russia fear-mongering. But when it comes to China, China's the real deal, though, Mike. We really do need to face off with China. So I'm going to let Douglas McGregor explain to you exactly what's going on with China, particularly in the context of Taiwan.
Experience with people from Taiwan, from the Ministry of Defense there over the last several years, off and on. They don't fear an attack by China. The problem is that now we have been so bellicose in our attitudes towards China that I think this statement by the president has sent a message to the Chinese that they're going to have to be prepared to act against us in the Strait of Taiwan.
And he's referring to the fact that the mentally deranged and incompetent Joe Biden, when asked, would you confront China militarily if they invaded Taiwan? And he just said, yes. Just going off script and answering. So he's a real tough guy. Joe Biden, he's a real tough guy. And he basically said, yeah, we would face off with China militarily. And this was an absolutely abhorrent thing to say. But my problem is, I'm here trying to bring some new information and some new ways to think about things, particularly to the conservative audience that listens to this show. You've been hoodwinked into this China stuff, too. You just heard him say the defense ministry of Taiwan's not concerned about any kind of invasion. It gets better. Just stick around. And you have been hoodwinked about China and confronting them militarily the same way that the left in particular and many normie Republicans have been convinced to face off with Russia in Ukraine.
So, you know, at least my contacts in Northeast Asia with our allies are telling me this was a terrible statement to make, because it confirms the worst fears in Beijing about us. So they begin to think more and more there's no alternative to an eventual war with the United States. And naturally, this drives Russia and China that much closer together.
Nice job, Biden.
And they see themselves as one another's partners for eternity to survive the onslaught of the United States.
Now, this is where it gets what I think is an even more interesting thing to understand, because none of us know these things. You know, we don't know. So I like to get new information. What is the relationship between China and Taiwan right now? The mainstream media here, the talking points are, particularly out of the Republicans, is that Taiwan is just this little country that wants to oppose China and everything. But China's about to come and take their stuff. China is about to invade, and we need to control the Gulf, the Strait of Taiwan. And if they make a move on it, then it's time for us to jump into action. And that's what most conservatives support.
I'm not the man psychoanalyst. I can't understand why he would say that.
Now, he's talking about Joe Biden there saying this nut job thing that, yes, we would send our military in to protect Taiwan. But this is when he goes into the relationship between Taiwan and China.
But will a statement like he made 2 days ago animate the Chinese military?
Yes, without question. Not just the military, but the leadership period in Beijing. Everyone is going to look at that and say, oh my God, these people have lost their minds. We've got to prepare for the worst. We need to understand something about Taiwan and China very briefly. During the last several crises, whenever there's been the threat of any kind, of any conflict in the region, the banks in Taiwan have tended to store all their wealth in China. Think about that.
Mm.
Does that sound to you as though these are adversaries and opponents? I mean, from the standpoint of the Chinese, Taiwan was Imperial Japan's unsinkable aircraft carrier. That's their fear. In other words, it can be the staging point for invasion and destruction of China. Therefore, they don't want any foreign forces in Taiwan. just as Putin did not want foreign forces, specifically U.S. and NATO, in eastern Ukraine.
Just as JFK didn't want Russian forces in Havana.
Exactly.
And Ronald Reagan didn't want communist forces in Central America. Isn't it funny, the hypocrisy of the United States? We didn't put up for a second the idea of Russians being in Havana, Cuba during the 1960s. We took action, didn't we? But we expect Vladimir Putin to be absolutely fine with NATO forces pointing missiles at him in Ukraine and Poland and now Finland. And that's a point that needs to be driven home, the hypocrisy of U.S. foreign policy.
Exactly. And this is something that we've known for a long time. And it's been made very clear that as long as the United States doesn't put forces on Taiwan, the Japanese don't put forces on Taiwan, there's nothing likely to happen. Then here's the final point. There are two parties in Taiwan. One is pro-Japanese, based on Japan's long control of the island, and the other is pro-Beijing. Right now, the pro-Japanese party is in power, but it only won election by a few votes the last time. That could change, and you could end up with, quote-unquote, the pro-Beijing party. The pro-Beijing party in Taiwan wants reunification with Greater China. Now, under those circumstances, why are we trying to create a conflict when there really is none? You have a huge segment of the population that thinks, so we reunify with China, we can do business with China. Right. People don't understand that the goal in Beijing and the goal on Taiwan are the same. They both want to live in something like Singapore. That's what the Chinese want, all of them. They don't particularly care about the government as long as it doesn't interfere with their ability to make money and enrich themselves. Their value orientation is not the same as ours. Although I should interject that that clearly is the value orientation in Washington, D.C. and the swamp. Right. But for most Americans, we don't think exclusively in those terms, but they do.
So there you go. So Taiwan and China, I didn't know that the two parties, one was pro-Japan, one was pro-China, and that they're kind of duking it out, and it's a pretty slim majority. There's a lot of people in Taiwan that are fine with being part of China. And yet Americans, particularly neocon war hawks or chicken hawks, really, here in the United States, are ready to face off with China militarily if they dare make a move on Taiwan. You're falling into what I believe is the exact same trap people have fallen for in Ukraine. And what the interesting thing is a lot of people can very clearly see the derangement of U.S. foreign policy when it comes to Ukraine. Of course, Russia doesn't want NATO weapons right on his border. After we promised him 30 years ago, we wouldn't come anywhere close to his border. We can understand the insanity of the Russia hysteria that they interfered in our elections and they're responsible for all evil in the world. Yet the same people who can see that very clearly can't see the fact that they've fallen for exactly the same war propaganda when it comes to China. We'll be right back. What's your frequency, can it this year been so drained? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We finish up every Friday show with the same segment, which is called This Week on the Crazy Train.
All aboard!
Now, to use the famous Jen Psaki term, we're going to miss her at the White House press conferences. I'm going to circle back to something in this segment here because I want to finish all my World Economic Forum stuff now. And I want to show you that these insane psychopaths at the World Economic Forum are going to try to hide this financial collapse, again, that was predicted by many people, particularly libertarian economists who understand the monetary system. They knew this was coming long before COVID and long before any Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yet that's what they're going to try to tuck this economic collapse behind. This was the keynote speaker that Roger Wicker listened to at the World Economic Forum. I got to assume he was there for the speech of the keynote speaker.
Thank you very much, Klaus. Ladies and gentlemen, indeed, following your introduction, dear Klaus, is difficult to believe that in Davos today, we're talking about war. Because the Davos spirit is the antithesis of war. It is about forging
slavery.
Ties and together finding solutions for the big challenges of the world. You might remember, and you worked on it together with us, that in recent years we have looked at smart and sustainable ways to fight climate change and how to shape globalization so that all can benefit.
Yeah.
How to make digital...
Now remember, I played a clip earlier, the guy talking about the meaningless, worthless, useless people.
Digitalization a force for good and mitigate its risks for democracies. So Davos is all about crafting a better future together.
For us.
That is what we should be talking here about today. But instead, we must address the cost and consequences of Putin's war of choice. The playbook of Russia's aggression against Ukraine comes straight out of another century. Treating millions of people, not as human beings, but as faceless populations to be moved or controlled or set as a buffer between military forces, trying to trample the aspiration of an entire nation.
This is quite a statement to make. Representing Western powers that have invaded Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Somalia, Syria, and are currently bombing Yemen. How dare the Russians treat these millions of people as just, you know, cannon fodder?
With tanks, this is not just a matter of Ukraine's survival. This is not just an issue of European security. This is putting our whole international order into question.
There it is, the international order. And you know what I've just realized? The World Economic Forum is racist. They didn't seem to care when brown people were being used by the millions and sent scurrying for their lives. They didn't have a problem with that. But as soon as you attack the white people, the especially white people, you know, the white supremacist people in Ukraine, suddenly the World Economic Forum's got a problem. This is also... The World Economic Forum is using this gas situation, trying to cut Russia off from gas, to usher in their green policies. They're going to make gas so painful to buy that you'll beg for any other technology.
Ladies and gentlemen, this conflict is also sending shockwaves throughout the world, further disrupting supply chains already stretched by the pandemic. It is putting new burdens on businesses and households.
Just like
we want. Has created a thick fog of uncertainty for investors across the globe. And more companies and countries already battered by 2 years of COVID-19 and all the resulting supply chain issues
that we caused
must now cope with rising prices for energy as a direct result of Putin's unpardonable war.
Gas prices were going up long before Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine.
And Russia has tried to put pressure on us. For example, by cutting the energy supplies, the gas supplies of Bulgaria, Poland, and now lately Finland.
Due to non-payment in Russian rubles. That's why Russia cut them off. They weren't paying their bill.
But this war and this behavior we see has only strengthened Europe's resolve to get rid of Russian fossil fuel dependency.
Ding, ding, ding,
rapidly. The climate cannot wait. But now the geopolitical reasons are evident too. We have to diversify away from fossil fuels. We have set our course already towards climate neutrality. So now we must accelerate our clean energy transition. And fortunately, we are already having in place the means to do so.
That's right. You know, at first I had reservations about putting this particular stuff into This Week on the Crazy Train, but you were listening to the criminally insane people trying to run planet Earth. They're going to try to tuck this financial crisis and a transition into green new energy into this Ukraine thing. by targeting Russia and its gas and using it as an excuse to jack up prices to force us into this green thing. As Joe Biden said the other day, it's the pain of transition that people are feeling. I'll be right back.
All over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the day. We'll finish up with This Week on the Crazy Train, but let me remind you, if you're looking for somewhere to go out and get some good food with the family, with a date, by yourself, or something for home, check out Your Pie in Gluckstadt, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right there by Germantown High School. The 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, beer, wine. They got it all. This is a veteran-owned, locally-owned business. It has hung in there with us. It's fantastic food. Make sure you download their app, the Your Pie app, from the App Store. You'll get goodies, freebies, all kinds of stuff. You will go back many times. You want to accumulate points every time that you do. That is Your Pie, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. Express your inner pizza. All right, let's see what else happened on This Week on the Crazy Train. I'm going to run short on time, as I always do, so let's try to find some of the more fun ones here. Well, this isn't fun, but boy, this has got me scratching my head. What could have possibly happened here?
In New York, a man collapsed and died this morning after finishing the Brooklyn Half Marathon in Coney Island. 16 other people were taken to the hospital with various injuries. From member station to
16 people, one of them died in this half marathon. Now, I don't know, maybe that's normal, but in the age of Operation Warp Speed, seems a little odd that 16 people, and I believe most of those were heart-related issues. Operation Warp Speed was the worst operation ever run on the American people, but as far as a more absurd one, we did just have a new, more absurd operation run.
Earlier this week, the White House rolled out a number of actions to address the baby formula shortage that's become a national crisis. The Biden administration invoked the Defense Production Act and authorized what's being called Operation Fly Formula to bring federally approved formula supplies from overseas. Also, the FDA announced it's easing some restrictions to allow more manufacturers that meet health and safety standards to provide formula in the U.S. That includes international suppliers. Even with these new measures, relief for desperate families could still be weeks or months away.
Yes. Operation Fly Formula. Good grief. How far we have fallen. We can't feed our babies unless the military gets involved. Let's see if we can get through this one real quick. This was Carl Cameron. He used to be a guy on Fox. Used to be sane. He's lost his mind.
Seriously, though. We've heard a lot.
Look at that. I screwed up a clip. How did I do that? Oh, I sure did. Carl Cameron, former Fox guy, was, I think he's on MSNBC or CNN now, and they were talking about the shooting in Buffalo and talking about the fact, you know, Tucker Carlson with his replacement theory. How do the people in Fox act? What do they think when they hear about these shootings? And Carl Cameron said, well, I can't even imagine. That's why I had to get out of there. And Carl Cameron ended this clip, which I don't have here, a little anticlimactic, isn't it? But he says, I think it's time the Biden administration take it seriously and start putting people who say these kinds of things in jail. In jail. Referring to Tucker Carlson. Here's just a fun one. We try to find some of the most absurd things that that happen in this country during the course of a week. And like I say, this was a fun one.
Washington Post, that was her subjective belief that she was a victim.
Let's go to
this is talking about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. I have not been following this thing at all, but apparently it's quite the soap opera. I've actually heard some people say it's very entertaining, so I might have to go check it out. But there was some betting going on about this that I found interesting.
Washington Post, that was her subjective belief that she was a victim.
Let's go to some of the betting that is taking place.
Let's do that.
Out there. Question one, who will the court have found to have defecated in the bed? This became a big issue in the case, and apparently there's been a lot of discussion around this. Amber Heard plus 150, the dogs plus 175, Johnny Depp plus 300, and the security guards
plus 1,000. So it's neck and neck between Amber Heard and the dogs for who likely did it.
I am more shocked that the security made the list. Right. So people are now theorizing that they deliberately did this to frame Amber Heard. That was the bigger shocker from that.
So we are apparently betting on who pooped the bed. Johnny Depp's bed. Holy cow. That's quite something, isn't it? I certainly don't want to miss this one. And thank you for somebody reminding me of this just a little while ago. If you have a recent graduate here in the Jackson schools, they've got an event for you this weekend. You know, there's all kinds of things that go on. Graduation, just a happy time, must be celebrated. So the Clarion Ledger had a section apparently called What's Going On This Weekend or What You Can Do This Weekend. You have to see this picture. I'm sure it's still on the Clarion Ledger. Calling all local high school and college graduates, you can come out and enjoy the Twerk Fest Dance Contest in Jackson. This is looks like it is tonight, taking place actually in Clinton. You can go to attend the Twerk Fest. You have to see the image of the big bootied women in their thongs that accompany this Clarion Ledger story on what to do for graduating from a Jackson school or college. Now, ladies, let me just tell you, get ready now. You might already need to head out that way. First 25 women get in free. That is for the Twerk Fest that'll take place to graduate celebrate graduation from these fine Jackson high school institutions. There you go. Something to do this weekend. That's all the time I got. Have a great one. I'll see you next week.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.